and 8:30 tonight, as at that time we'll be going back in session on the Senate floor. Members, as you can see by the agenda, we're going to move through these bills. As you all know, it's the first week of deadline, and that is why we have 16 bills. Whatever we do not finish during our normal committee time, we are going to come back at 6 p.m. to finish. It is my intent that we hear all of these bills today and later tonight as we move through. If you want to say a few words about the time crunch and doing the work of the people, that's exactly what we're doing. We're going to make sure that we completely hear these bills as we move forward. So the first item on the agenda is Senate File 2138, Senator Carlson. It's a Bemidji Northern Minnesota Veterans Home bond issue and appropriation. Members, this bill is currently in capital investment. And because it deals with Vets Home and the testifiers were already here, I understand they came down from Bemidji and testified at the House, or will. We said we would allow them a short time to testify here on this bill. We will not be moving the bill at all because it is in the other committee. But we did want to definitely give time for testimony. So, Senator Carlson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for hearing Senate File 2138. And yes, members traveled all the way down from Bemidji. It's a four-hour drive to testify in the Northern Minnesota Vet Home. It would be more appropriate for me to turn this over to them and let them do their presentation at this time. I would present to you members of the committee, the chair, Commissioner Quentin Fairbanks, Commissioner Joe Venny, and Dr. Ralph Morris.
All right, please state your name, and then you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Joe Venny, Beltrami County Commissioner, Chair of the Northern Minnesota Veterans Home Task Force and First Vice President of the Association of Minnesota Counties. With me today, to my left, Commissioner Fairbanks, Beltrami County Board Chair, and to my right, Dr. Ralph Morris, retired Air Force Colonel and of the Medical Corps. We're talking to you today, with all due respect, to the planning of for the future care of veterans, the Band of Brothers and Sisters of the United States Armed Forces, meeting the health care needs of 400,000-plus veterans in the state of Minnesota. From World War II to Korea to Vietnam to the recent Gulf War deployments, it is important for us to remember that veterans remain banded together. They serve together, they identify with one another, and they remain together in mind, body, and spirit. There is a comradeship among veterans unlike any other that cannot be broken. Veterans and their attendant needs for health care have been sustained and earned in defense of our country and our freedoms, and were met with great sacrifice. Veterans should never be identified as an entitlement group. Rather, veterans have earned their due by their military service, and it must therefore be the fulfillment of our promise to care for those who have placed themselves in harm's way in military service to the country, and who now need or will need a continuum of specialty care. Veterans and their needs must be met wherever they are found to live throughout the state of Minnesota, and indeed throughout the United States of America. In northwestern Minnesota, we have identified upwards of 30,000 veterans in need of access to care as provided in veterans' homes, which should be found to be located in reasonable proximity of veterans. The geographic vastness of northern northwestern Minnesota, thousands of square miles, finds 30,000-plus veterans situated 2, 3, and 4 hours away from pre-existing veterans' homes, away from their communities, away from their families, away from their livelihoods. Surely, reasonable access to veterans' home care is not an unrealistic expectation. We respectfully submit that our advocacy for the siting of the next Minnesota Veterans Home in Beltrami County, Bemidji, and for the broad region of northern northwestern Minnesota meets a most compelling needs justification. We're appreciative of the opportunity to share with you today relevant factual bearings for the northwestern Minnesota home concept and for a Bemidji location of the next Veterans Home in Minnesota. The duty now is to take care of veterans, and that duty is ours. I would defer now, Mr. Chair, to Commissioner Quentin Fairbanks.
Please state your name, and you may proceed.
My name is Quentin Fairbanks. I'm a Beltrami County Commissioner. I'm a tribal member of the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians, and I'm a Korean vet. Beltrami County has two large Indian reservations within its boundaries, and we service a third. Our area has the largest populations of Indian veterans in the state, if not the nation. You will not find an Indian vet in our facilities that are run by the state for one reason: the distance that they have to travel. Just to get down here from Red Lake Reservation is 6 hours. If they go to Fargo, it's 3.5 hours. And this is very hard, poor roads. They don't have the money to cover the cost of gas and so forth. So it would only be reasonable that instead of them coming to you, that you come to them. The Indian veteran, woman or man, are very proud of the service they have done to the country. They're very patriotic. They're very proud, and they ask so little. What happens is when they can't, they're very family-orientated. And by that, from the time they're born until they die, they're very orientated in the family. They do not want to live in a facility 5 hours from home without their loved ones. So what they're doing, they're dying at home, and they're doing it on a regular basis. This veteran's home is not about Bemidji. It's not about Red Lake. It's about the region, and it's about veterans. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vinnie.
Next, Dr. Ralph Morris. Please, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please state your name and proceed.
My name is Ralph Morris. I'm a retired Army Medical Corps officer. In 2007, I had the privilege to represent General Shelatov on the governor's long-term veterans care task force. During the work of that task force, we looked at numerous issues with veterans' home. You can see on the display in front of me the existing five homes and the approximate waiting times for veterans to get into the homes. The updated figures for those times is anywhere from 3 to 6 months to get into a home. This map also shows that in northwestern Minnesota, there is a lack of access to a veteran's home within a reasonable driving time for the veterans as well as for their families. We recently were able to negotiate with Sanford Health the donation of 15 acres of land next to the regional hospital in Bemidji. The display over to my left shows the highlighted 15 acres next to the hospital complex and adjacent to major highway arteries, as well as the hospital, or well as the airport and shopping facilities. The donation of the land was a major step in attaining a sixth veterans home for the state. The approximate land value of that is $1.5 to $2 million that will be donated to the state. The veterans in Minnesota are about 400,000 people. They compose of about three waves of veterans: the World War II Korean veterans, the Vietnam era veterans, and our newest generation of veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. By planning for a sixth veterans home, the state is truly going to be meeting the need of both current veterans and the future needs of veterans for the state. Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, members, at this time we would entertain any questions.
Well, I think for me, and I know I've talked to you, Joe, early on before, and I know I've had talks with both General Nash and Commissioner Shelletoe, and I, anything we can do for the veterans is good. My concern is that I, for one, believe that if there is a way that we can work with the federal government to make sure that there are opportunities for our veterans to stay in their local areas, at their local assisted living or their local nursing homes, if they can be provided for properly. And I think for the most part we all agree there are some special needs, hence maybe another home would be needed. But I think we have to take a look at all avenues here to make sure that we treat our veterans the best way possible, specifically with what many call the tsunami of veterans that will be coming home here shortly. Veterans that we are not accustomed to having come home with loss of limbs and traumatic brain injuries, because in past wars the survival rate wasn't as great as what we have today with all the medical techniques that we have come up with. So I admire you for putting this together and working so hard. When you take a look at the ground is there, and I think at the time that the economy is there, there might be a possibility.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not optional, Mr. Chair. I believe it's obligatory that we take care of our men and women when they come back from theaters of operation in defense of our freedom with their intactness disturbed, dislodged, and in some cases destroyed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add another comment.
Yes,
I retired from the Minnesota National Guard in 2007. The last few months of my duty, I did post-deployment physicals on our troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. And you're exactly right about the tsunami of new veterans that are currently coming back to Minnesota and the special needs that they need. We would do 15 to 20 physicals on veterans a day, and the needs of those young soldiers are truly going to be demanding.
That's correct. All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you all for your service. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Our second item on the agenda is Senate File 2254. Senator Olson, the item is Lester as the official state soil. So I know Senator Olson is making her way up. If somebody's going, there's plenty of room. Just grab a chair along with her. Welcome. And before I let Senator Olson start, I know, as unfortunate as it will be, that we will have media talk about the next two bills as fluffy, no nonsense. Why are we wasting state taxpayer time to hear these bills? And I want to preface that first, because trust me, that's what you're going to hear. You know, sometimes it is good to find out a little bit about why we have state anything. And that's why I wanted Senator Olson to go first, because she brings a reason and an understanding why some of these bills that the media think are frivolous to the forefront. And I just wanted to preface that, Senator Olson, because you and I talked about it, and we know how it might be reported, but let's move forward. Welcome to our committee, your committee as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm pleased to be here, though I have never sought as a part of any legislative agenda, having a bill regarding a state symbol. But I would have to say that the first one, which was brought by school children, did become law, and that was making the state sport ice hockey. And believe it or not, that did not get maltreated by the media. I think recognized that we were the state of hockey. But I would like to say that this one was not brought by school children, but by soil scientists to me, and it struck a chord with me. And so that is why I'm here today with this, because the state symbols aren't frivolous. They're not meant to be. They are kind of a picture of our state, and they're used in different ways. I just went to our latest legislative manual, and in the first few pages, there are the state symbols are all, let me see if I can get the right, here we go. We've got a state song, we've got the state seal, flag, flower, state tree, state bird, butterfly, fish, gemstone, grain, mushroom, state drink and muffin, with a recipe for blueberry muffins. The state fruit, which is interesting, I think that Senator Wieger carried that one, and the University of Minnesota brags about it in many of their publications as the Honeycrisp apple is the state fruit. The state photograph.
Chair, that was Senator LeClaire on the apple, and I had the monarch.
The monarch butterfly is there. And so we're hoping to add, it looks like we're hoping to add two more, but not only is they are tools that are used to promote our state and give a picture or an image of our state, and I know the Office of Tourism uses them as well. The other important feature that they have is that when our children in schools study the state of Minnesota, the symbols are often one of the units that they look at as to gain a picture of that. And that is for both of these reasons. I was intrigued by the notion of having a state soil. We like to have them be things that are somewhat unique to Minnesota as well. And the Lester soils are predominantly in Minnesota. There's a little bit of fallout in Iowa, but they are Minnesotan. And they are, if you look at the map of where they're located, where that column of those soils are, they are some of the most productive lands in our agricultural foundation of our ag economy in this state that there is. And so it gives an opportunity for people to understand the importance of these soils and the role that they have played in the development of this state in our economy. And I'm very proud to do it. When one of the handouts that's in your packet is, when I looked at that, it also brought back memories. It's, soil, how the official soil, we can't grow without it. And on the second page, there is a picture. It isn't in color here, but if you look at that soil, it's like a pit that's been drawn, and you can see the different delineation of the various soils. Okay, there is a color one available too, which brought back memories. In my 4-H days, I got recruited to participate in the soil judging contest one of our county events. And this is exactly what we did. We learned how to identify the topsoil and the subsoil and the nature of those soils and whether they were favorable to root growth and the percolation of water and all of these kinds of things. And it was a great learning experience. And our Hennepin County team went on to be both reserve champion and state champion in 2 years. So I have an association with that, plus living on a farm all of my life. And I believe there may be some pieces of the Lester soil on my farm. There are like 46,000 acres, I believe, in Hennepin County that are Lester soils. And so because it's unique, because I think there's a real need for us to understand and appreciate the role that soils play in our economy and in our state, to understand and appreciate, and it's very appropriate to designate the Lester soils and open that conversation. There are several things coming up, too, that I think are the reason for the timing of this designation, is that the University of Minnesota's Department of Soil Science, it's got a couple other terms in it, is celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. and the Association of Soil Scientists is celebrating their 40th anniversary. And to commemorate that in November, the Smithsonian exhibit on soils is going to be coming to the Bell Museum at the university, and for people to see, and the Leicester soils are one of the soils featured there. I also learned in this process that one reason that our state teams of soil judging never went on to the national is because the soils are so different in other parts of the state that we really have been at a great disadvantage at that point in our lives. But we did also develop a very great appreciation for the soils in Minnesota. So that is the reason that we're here today with this. And I think for you to understand that symbols of Minnesota are not frivolous. They are meaningful, and they can be used to great benefit for our state and its advancement. Today I have two people that are both soil scientists with me. And get down to brass tacks here. Dr. Carl Rosen is the chairman of the Department of Climate, Soil, and Water at the University of Minnesota. That's the department I was trying to muddle through. And Ms. Carol Raditz, who is the USDA Minnesota State Soil Scientist. So we have a state soil scientist on staff, and they are both members of that professional organization and will give brief testimony if I haven't been able to convince you that this is a good move.
Ms. Raditz, if you would like to...
Dr. Rosen,
please introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name's Carl Rosen. I'm the head of the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate. And I would like to thank Senator Olson for introducing and for the members and Mr. Chair for considering this bill. Our department has a very long history of conducting research and educating the citizens of Minnesota about the importance of soils. Our department was founded in 1913 as the Division of Soils, and we have gone through a number of name changes since then. It's now the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate, but we are celebrating our centennial in the coming year. And we do have a number of activities planned. One is the Smithsonian Soil Exhibit, which will be exhibited at the Bell Museum. And this is a very educational exhibit that's going to be focused to K-12 students as well as the general public. It's a first-class exhibit. And we're also partnering with the Minnesota Association of Professional Soil Scientists about their anniversary. And finally, we do hope to raise even more awareness about the importance of soils in our daily lives by designating Leicester as the official Minnesota state soil. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Carol Raditz with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and she can talk a little more about Leicester and why we picked that soil.
Please state your name and proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I'm Carol Raditz. I'm the state soil scientist for USDA NRCS here in St. Paul. This is my 30th year with NRCS as a soil scientist. I'm also a member of the Association of Professional Soil Scientists here in Minnesota. I am a University of Minnesota graduate with a soil science major, and I was on the soil judging team, so we have something in common. And I was also raised on a dairy farm in southeast Minnesota. So I have deep roots in soils and a great appreciation and respect for the soil and those who earn their living from it. I have to thank Senator Olson for her words. It was very exciting to see someone so passionate about soil. So thank you very much. Okay, just a brief bit about why did we choose Leicester? Okay, Minnesota has hundreds of soil series to choose from, like in somewhere in excess of 900. We worked really hard to find one that we thought represented Minnesota. Okay, there's not one soil that covers the entire state. And why are there so many? It comes back to the soil forming factors. There's climate, relief, parent material, vegetation. This varies widely across the state. At Leicester, it formed in glacial materials. Most of the soils in Minnesota were formed in glacial materials. It developed in a transition zone between prairie and forest. Both prairie and forest are important to Minnesota. It covers a significant area, somewhere around 500,000 acres. mostly in central Minnesota and a little bit into the urban areas, and it's very productive. It's mostly used for corn and soybeans now. We just felt it was a good representative of the soils of Minnesota. And to me, it's not so much about which soil is chosen, but rather that you go ahead and have an official soil, because that says a lot. And I agree with Senator Olson that a state symbol has a lot of educational opportunities, and it's not a frivolous thing. So thank you very much.
Any questions? Senator Torres Ray, you're not going to muddy the waters, are you?
I am not, hopefully, not going to muddy the waters. I don't know. I can't promise, Mr. Chair. Kind of like to do that. That's why I'm a co-author of this bill. So.
She's standing on firm ground for her comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually in relationship to your comment at the beginning of this hearing with respect to these bills. And I'm, you know, a co-author with Senator Olson, and agree with her that, you know, these are things that we need to do, and I actually enjoy doing that and see, you know, kids here with the Bears, and I just truly enjoy that. But I'm also one of those members who received comments this morning about authoring this bill and, you know, received some emails saying, why am I working on this and I'm not even able to secure a hearing on my bills in your committee, Senator Olson, which are non-controversial in education. So I just wanted to say this because I know that I will continue. I just want to tell my constituents and the public that I will continue to work hard to build bipartisan support on issues that are perhaps less controversial but very important, and continue to work hard to do the work on more controversial issues with our chairs and the people who are responsible for giving us these hearings and bringing this to light to the public. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Senator Olson?
I'd like to move that Senate File 2254 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our third item on the agenda is Senate File 1905, Senator Benson, Black Bear as official state mammal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My testifiers are getting ready. Could we have Grace come up, too?
What school are they from, Senator?
These are first graders from Andover Elementary.
Okay. Because I might as well do this while they're here. I received a nice letter up here, and it says, Senator Mike Perry, I think the black bear should be the Minnesota state mammal because we are one of only four states that does not have one. Did you know the black bears build dens for the winter? Their yearling come with them the first year. Thank you. Carter, is it Hissock? I think that's what it is. Andover Elementary School. And the where's Carter? All right. I like the bear paw that you put on there, Carter. Good job. All right, Senator Benson.
And Mr. Chair and committee members, I have before you Senate File 1905. It is a provision to make the black bear the state mammal. The first graders at Andover Elementary and their teacher, Dana Coleman, started following the bear den at the North American Bear Center in Ely, Minnesota, beginning in September of 2010. At the present time, Minnesota does not have a state mammal. As the letter to Senator Perry said, we are currently one of four states that do not recognize an animal as their state mammal. With the research, education, and the number of wild black bears in the Minnesota great outdoors, we bring before you Senate File 1905 and request that you make the black bear the state mammal of Minnesota. When I visited the first grade classroom in Andover, I was impressed with the learning that these children had done by observing the Bear Center and the passion their teacher, Dana Coleman, had for teaching the children and using this very unique way to transmit lessons. Ms. Coleman could not be with us today, so I have in her place one of the parents, Ms. Vicki Frosley, who will read a letter from Ms. Coleman.
Please state your name and you may proceed.
Vicki Frosley. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Vicki Frosley, and I'm here on behalf of my son's first grade teacher, Dana Coleman, to talk to you about the Black Bear State Mammal Bill. Dana asked me to apologize for her not being here today. It is our spring break, and she had promised her elderly aunt and uncle to take them to Florida for spring break. So she asked me to pass on her message to you. So this is what it is. How did it all begin? Since September 2010, my first grade class has watched the Den Cam and read the daily updates from the North American Bear Center in Ely, Minnesota. I immersed black bears in every curriculum area: grafting, observation, data collecting, weather, the family tree, writing, our community, habitat, life cycle, food chain, money, fractions, and now civics. The children learned so much from them that they wanted to help the bears that had become so much a part of their life in the classroom. It forward, we decided to raise, decided as a class to raise money to help buy nuts and grapes for the research bears. For the month of April, we had a fundraiser readathon. They knew they were raising money for their bears. For the curriculum, for the culmination of our readathon fundraiser, we invited their families to our very special day celebration. Here the parents witnessed our daily bear update, heard their children read from my book of bear facts, and were able to see firsthand the bear box. The kids were doing the teaching now, explaining all the items in the box to their families. My 23 six-year-olds raised $872 for nuts and grapes for the bears. When Jason, one of the cubs, unexpectedly died, it was hard on the kids. At the same time, it was a wonderful teachable moment. Most six-year-olds haven't yet experienced death of a loved one. Mine have. It was a very real and personal way to help them understand the circle of life and the food chain. To honor Jason, we made our own black bears out of construction paper. With photos I took, our district print shop made personal note cards. We sold these very special note cards, and we earned an additional $241 for more nuts and grapes for a grand total of $1,113. One day in class, while discussing the bears, we were talking about where a bear goes in a thunderstorm. They go up a Norway pine, or the red pine, which is our state tree. They asked, what's a state tree? I explained and proceeded to tell them about the state bird, the state flower, and the state song. They asked what our state animal was. So I Googled it and found out, as you've heard, that we're only one of four states that does not have a state mammal. So I went home, Googled to find out how we needed to get a bill passed, and the rest is history. Or at least we hope it is. Soon history. This is our journey of a lifetime, and the reason for the introduction of the Minnesota State File Number 1905, Black Bear, Minnesota State's Mammal. It came from an inquisitive, passionate, and thoughtful group of six-year-olds. It makes sense to honor something that you truly believe in and have learned so much from. We call it paying it forward. Our state symbols have a history of coming from the ideas and efforts of our children. In 1988, the blueberry muffin became our state muffin due to the efforts of third graders from Carlton, Minnesota. In 2000, the monarch butterfly became our state butterfly after fourth graders from Manamedi worked to get the bill passed. In 2005, elementary students from Bayport successfully got a bill passed to make the Honeycrisp apple our state fruit. And in 2012, we were hoping to be able to say the black bear became our state mammal because of the hard work of first graders from Andover Elementary. We need you to pass this bill for school children throughout the state, letting them know that even first graders have a voice that deserves to be heard. We need you to pass this bill for the state of Minnesota. So now it will only be Iowa, Rhode Island, and Indiana without a state mammal. We need you to pass this bill to help the DNR fill that vacant spot on their poster. But most importantly, we need you to pass this bill for this amazing group of first graders who have put their heart and soul into making this happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Benson.
And Mr. Chair, I also have Alex and Grace who would like to briefly address the committee.
My name is Alex Frosley, and I am here to talk about our Black Bear State Mammal Bill. This is why I think the black bear should be a state mammal. They eat blueberries, and it's in the blueberry muffin. And they climb up the tree, so when the female is going to forage for food, she can just leave baby by the tree, so then if a predator comes, they can just scurry right up that tree. Can you please pass this bill for my classmates, the state of Minnesota, and me? Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Senator Benson, and your next testifier?
Mr. Chair, I have Grace to testify before the committee.
Turn the microphone close to Grace and tilt it down a little bit, Senator Benson. Welcome, Grace.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Grace Stone, and I am here to talk about our Black Bear State Mammal Bill. Did you know our state is one of four states that doesn't have a state mammal? I learned many interesting facts about the black bear, like how they climb the red pine trees in a storm. They get scared, but they take care of their family. We need you to pass our Black Bear State Mammal Bill for my classmates, the state of Minnesota, and me. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just thinking the way Alex looks so calm, he's going to be a state senator one of these days.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Alex did wear a tie because he came to the Senate today.
That's right. Questions? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Senator Benson, for bringing this bill forward. You know, I've been around here for a long time, and the other bills that we talked about, the Blueberry Muffin Bill and so forth, have been just the best learning opportunity for kids in our system that I have ever seen. And I know Dana Coleman has been working really hard on this issue for a few years, so many of her first-grade classes have benefited from learning about their government. And what a great deal that they can learn about their government very young age, so they're not intimidated by it, but they feel comfortable with it. And I just want to tell the two speakers here that you did an excellent job, and you were very well prepared. And you know, it's just great to see that you already can read so well and speak so well at your age. So thank you very much for coming.
Further comments, Senator Olson. Well,
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the bill. If that's possible.
As I'm sure that would be fine as a former teacher.
Once a teacher, always a teacher.
That's correct.
1905.
Pardon me?
1905.
Senate File 1905 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Prevails. Thanks for your vote, too, Alex. I heard you. Casey, thanks. Thanks for coming forth. Thank you very much. Our fourth item on the agenda is Senate File 2271, Senator Al DeKreif, Minnesota National Guard Military Award, Assurance to Non-Members Authorization.
Now everybody's leaving with them.
All right, Senator DeKreif, please proceed when you are ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee, I would like to start out by thanking whoever scheduled me right after the black bear hearing. that was quite a hearing. Senate File 2271 will allow issuance of state awards to non-members of the Minnesota National Guard. This is an agency housekeeping bill. It will affect three different categories of potential award recipients: members of the National Guard of other states who are worthy of recognition for supporting the Minnesota National Guard, members of foreign military forces who are worthy of recognition for supporting the Minnesota National Guard, and citizens of Minnesota who are not members of the National Guard but contribute to the efficiency and effectiveness of the organization. Governor Pawlenty had authorized by executive order the authority to establish and present awards to non-members of the Minnesota National Guard, but that executive order has since expired. The permanent order that was derived from the executive order is still in effect, but this amendment will clarify the authority to make these presentations. In your packets, you will find a copy of Adjutant General Nash's letter to the committee. He's in favor of this. And I have a testifier, Mr. Don Kerr, who's Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs.
Thank you, Senator DeKreif. Mr. Kerr, if you could just say your name into the for the tape, for the record, and then proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. Senator DeKreif did a great job explaining the bill. My only addition would be a little bit of history. The statute from which we derive this authority was originally written just after the Korean War, and I'm sure at that time there really was no foresight about how the role of the National Guard would change that creates all these opportunities for us to be recognizing folks who are not members of the National Guard. And that evolution really kind of came to a climax about 10 years ago when the War on Terror started, and we started having a lot more interaction with foreign military forces and also other National Guard forces. And we've actually been executing the executive authority, but we were always concerned a little bit that the statute didn't really match up with the executive authority to award these military awards to members of other National Guards and of other foreign military. And the Adjutant General is really interested in cleaning this up to make sure that we are in compliance with the law, and that's the basis of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Members, are there any questions? Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that Senate File 2271 be recommended to pass.
All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you. We're going to move to the fifth item on the agenda, which is Senate File 2260. Senator Dames. Actually, it's the sixth item. Seventh. We're a little bit out of order. But since you're here, if you could just proceed. If you've got some testifiers, they could join you at the table. Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm here today to introduce Senate File 2260. Senate File 2260 is a bill for an act relating to the environment, providing for alternative local standards for subsurface sewage treatment systems. If you recall, a year ago we had a bill that extended the rules or extended the time period to work out the rules. We did have some differences and stuff between the different players. So we did extend that, which gave us time to get all the players to the table and get things worked out. So this is a bill that works that out, that we've all kind of gotten on the same page. Nobody's super excited, but nobody's super upset. So it's one of those bills that I think come together pretty well. The reason I guess is here is because of the rulemaking. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Kirk Kadelka from the PCA to just discuss the rulemaking portion of it.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Mr. Kadelka, if you could say your name for the record and then proceed, please.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm the legislative director with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And the rulemaking is just on the very bottom of page 2 and contained mostly the rest of it on page 3. The change that's being made to the law here deals with alternative local standards. And so with a change in the law, we also need to go into the Minnesota rules to make the similar changes throughout that this affects. This provision allows for us to go in very specifically change to make sure the rules are now matching statutes, and that are all that we're allowed to change. And this allows us to use a sped up procedure so that this can be done as soon as possible and folks can start utilizing it.
Thank you, sir. Members, are there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal note?
There is not. I'm not aware of one.
Is there a fiscal impact, Senator Dames?
I'm going to have Mr. Kadelka answer that, please.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and committee members, to the question, the agency, the PCA, estimates anytime we'd go in for a good cause exemption, it's $10,000.
Senator Wieger.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we need to book that?
That's a good question.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if we do or not.
Could we have Mr. Lundeen speak to that, please?
I believe if there was any cost with this, I mean, the PCA doesn't fall under their budget under the jurisdiction of this committee. So I think it would be under the Environment and Natural Resources Committee to account for any expenditures that would be attributed to this. But I'm not aware that a fiscal note was actually requested on it.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, you know, while it references rules, all it says is that these alternative local standards can be no less stringent than the provisions in the existing rule. So this process appears not to involve the creation of new rules, which would be the jurisdiction of our committee and the cost of it. But could you explain a little bit further what you meant by the cost of one of these alternatives? Are you with the PCA? Okay, so you're saying that anything that's an alternative to the existing plan does have a cost?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, to the question, the cost is for the actual process of going in and making the change to the Minnesota rules and the SSTS rules. It's not dealing with the local standards. So that would be the cost of going through the limited process that the good cause exemption allows, staff time, cost for putting the materials into the state registry, and related items.
Members, I will just say that I have heard from staff that this bill has already been heard in the Environment Committee, and its next stop was scheduled to be in Finance.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Sir, this doesn't require... It doesn't require that the commissioner go in and use the good cause exemption to amend the rules. It allows you to do it. So what the earlier paragraph of those alternative standards appear not to be required to be put into rule, but that you could do that. So is there a general assumption that if you decide to do that, then you are bearing the cost of that within your existing budget?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we do need to go in and amend the rules because of the statute change. Without this provision, the good cause exemption, we would have to go through the lengthier process, which would incur additional costs for the agency. This allows for us to use a procedure that is much quicker, since we are only authorized to make changes that are directly related to the statutory changes, and then that is less cost than for the agency as a result.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Kadelka, then I would assume that that would be a cost that would be gladly borne internally by the agency as opposed to any additional amount that should be booked.
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is something that we would take care of with through the agency.
Looks like we don't have any additional questions. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 2260 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Measure does pass, and it will move to Finance. Thank you very much, Senator Names. We are now back to the sixth item on the agenda, Senate File 2166. Senator Wolf.
It's the school bus, Senator.
In order to get this bill in the shape and form that Senator Wolf is looking for, Senator Lilly moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please indicate. Oh, they do?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion? Members, any questions on the A2 amendment? Senator Wolf, if you could provide some background, some information, whatever you'd like to share with us before we have that discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will leave that for the sergeant to explain.
Sergeant, if you could say your name for the record, and please proceed.
Certainly. Sergeant Paul Davis, Minnesota State Patrol.
Go ahead, sir.
All right. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, would like to move forward with Senate File 2166 with a deletion here with regards to the changing of Minnesota Statute 169.45. Oh, lost it here, sorry. With regards to the point system, and we would like to have that removed from the amendment at this time. So page 3, deletion, section 7.
Senate Counsel, if you could please explain this for the members.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the A2 amendment, which is actually what the witness is describing, deletes Section 7. So his comments are about the A2, which is to delete Section 7. Section 7 has rulemaking in it, so by deleting that, there is no more rulemaking in this bill.
And members, to my knowledge, that's the only part of this bill that causes it to come to this committee. So with that measure removed, it can proceed to other committees, as I understand. Is that right, Senator Wolf?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it would be going to the floor then.
Okay. Members, any questions? Okay, before we do that, let's adopt the A2 amendment. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The measure does prevail. To the bill. Is there any more discussion, members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was all that was needed for this committee's part of the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Wolf.
Did somebody move the bill?
I'm going to
move it.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 2166 as amended be recommended to pass.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Again, the measure does prevail. Thank you, Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The school bus senator.
She's done.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
All right, I don't see Senator Roebling here, so I think we'll move ahead to the eighth item on the agenda, Senate File 1755, Senator Gazelka, State Employees Unpaid Leave Option to Avoid Layoffs Establishment.
Mr. Chair, I can do that. I would need the delete all amendment. I have it up in my office. I thought I was doing it tonight, but
okay.
I apologize, but if somebody's got it for me, I certainly can do it.
We have it.
It's here.
I think we do have it in the packet, but
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Senator Gazelka moves the A1 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Prevails to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is fairly simple. Unpaid leave to avoid layoffs. If the Commissioner of Management and Budget determines that layoffs of executive branch employees may be required, the Commissioner may request exclusive representatives to negotiate amendments to collective bargaining agreements that would allow appointing authorities to implement unpaid leave and reduction in hours instead of imposing layoffs. Again, this is a tool in the toolbox, members. This is not a requirement. There may be situations where it might be in the best interest to have unpaid leave and reduction of hours rather than laying off employees. So my hope is in tough situations that they're, as a tool, they might determine that maybe it's better to go that route than the other. But again, it just gives them the authority to do so. It is not required.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Gazelka, who brought this bill to you?
This
Senator Gazelka.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Senator Goodwin, the author in the House asked if I would carry this over here. The reason why I carried it, Mr. Chair and members, is in the private sector there are times that times are tough and you don't want to let somebody go. And so your decision is, hey, will everybody maybe take a few hours less till we get through this rather than lay somebody off? And so that's why I agreed to take it, Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin.
So,
Senator Goodwin.
Chair, thank you. And Senator Gazelka, so this didn't come from the agencies or the bargaining units?
Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, members, not that I'm aware of.
Okay, then.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, I'm pretty sure that this can be negotiated in language for the bargaining units and the agencies. So if they haven't come to you with this bill, my question is the need for this language outside of the collective bargaining unit. We all don't want to see people laid off. You're right in that assumption. But I just want, if there's anybody here from the agency or from the collective bargaining units, I'd like to hear their take on this.
Do we have anyone present that would like to testify? Senator Olson?
To that point, this appears to apply when the agreements have been ratified, by the legislature or by the LCC, and it allows for the potential of negotiating amendments to it for this purpose. You wouldn't necessarily foresee it or have it in an ongoing one, but it would allow for that to happen in the case of that situation. I think probably people would prefer not having that necessarily being a constant rider on the collective bargaining agreement. But who am I? I may have some other answers here.
Please state your name.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. My name is Richard Kajewski, the Communications and Public Affairs Director at MAPE. I would just agree with the author. The language clearly is permissive. I would also remind members that in the collective bargaining agreements, at least with MAPE and AFSCME and most of the other state unions, we have unpaid leave language in these types of issues that are currently existing in the contract. What this bill gets into, although it is permissive, is really what has been called furloughs around the country in the past. And furloughs have, and I would encourage everyone, and I didn't come prepared with copies. I'd be happy to get them to you, Mr. Chair, to pass around. But they have severe consequences on the state of Minnesota and the money that's already come into the state to be spent on different federal programs. It was a major issue in contract negotiations during the Plenty administration, and one of the major factors as to why furloughs were actually dropped by management during the negotiations process. There is a very severe level of consequences. In regards to negotiating something like this, the ability is already there. The management could bring a proposal that says you can't chew gum in state buildings on Wednesdays, if that's what they so chose to bring to the table. And it may be comical, but in reality, when you look at something like this, Mr. Chair, we have different divisions. In fact, one that's under the purview of your committee, the CAP Board, has actually done something like this to prevent layoffs within their group. This really requires MMB, requires MMB to act on behalf of all the other agencies in a manner in which they don't act today. And I don't know if they're here to testify on this bill, but they don't determine whether other agencies administer their own layoffs or not. That's not an MMB decision. That's a decision made by each individual agency. So those are just a couple of concerns on the bill, but I do agree with the author. It is permissive.
All right. Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Gazelka.
Well, Mr. Chair, I recommend Senate File 1755 pass. I'm not sure.
Goes to the floor.
To the floor.
On Senator Gazelka's motion that Senate File 1755 as amended be recommended pass, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Roebling, the seventh item on the agenda, Senate File 1727, Racehorse Medication Regulatory Threshold Concentration Set by the Minnesota Racing Commission Authorization. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. What we have here is in 2008, we decided to give the Minnesota Racing Commission permission to set in rule the levels of medications that could be administered to racehorses. And in the process, we kind of missed an area, but we thought it was better for them to have that in rule than for us to have that in all of our statute books and to have to adjust that as medications changed. But we found a little bit of a conflict where there was one that remained that shouldn't have, and they did change it in rule, but it is now somewhat in conflict with our statute. So what we're trying to do with this bill is simply put the two in alignment so that they are not conflicting, because statute always trumps rule. So technically, if someone wanted to administer the current level allowed in statute with the new medications, it could be a very, very high dose of medication and inappropriate for the horses. But they could argue that it was legal because it's in statute. And so we need to have it followed in rule. And that's why we're before you. And if you have questions, I have Dick Kruger and Mary Manning from the Racing Commission with me to talk about what happened, if you need clarification on that, and why this is important for the horse racing industry.
All right, we have testifiers. Who would like to go first? Just state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dick Kruger, member, executive director of the Racing Commission. The language that we are proposing to you today is part of the fabric of what we have been doing for the last 3 to 4 years regarding our increase in oversight of the use of medications at the racetracks. The language that is stricken was language that was in the enabling legislation back in 1983. And that language actually set the level for phenylbutazone at 3 micrograms per milliliter. And phenylbutazone was the only NSAID that had been approved to be used in horse racing at the time. About 5-6 years later, we came in and increased it to 5, which is what you see in the language now. And that was so that we would be more uniform with what other states were doing. Since then, there's been a great deal of research regarding medications that are used in horse racing. And quite frankly, our drug testing has gotten a lot better than it was 29 years ago. We are in collaboration with the Association of Racing Commissioners International. That's a group of 38 racing states. They all support going from 5 and at this time to 2 micrograms per milliliter. So we are going to be proposing rulemaking to do that if this bill passes. RCI relies a lot on the work of what's called the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium, which is a group in Lexington, Kentucky, which does actually provide funding for research at some of the major universities around the country and is kind of a clearinghouse for research on horse racing issues. With that, Mr. Chairman, I hope I've given you some background, and I'll answer any questions that you may have.
Sure. Any questions for our author or the testifier? Senator Wigger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Roebling, would you have any objection for this going on the consent calendar?
I would not have any objection. It's a pretty simple proposal, and it puts us in alignment with rules that are national standards. And quite frankly, I think it's, from looking at it, it's the last section that actually specifies a certain amount, because everything else is already set in rule. And this one has been, too, but it has the conflict with the statute.
Well, Senator Wigger.
I'd like to move that Senate File 1727 be recommended pass and be placed on the consent calendar.
To Senator, any discussion on that? To that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you,
Senator Roebling. And we're going to move to the 11th item on the agenda, Senate File 2227, Senator Lilly. Administrative Law Judge and Compensation Judge Mandatory Retirement Age Modification. Members, we are passing information around to you at this time.
We thought we were done, but the chair is running fast today, so we're going to keep moving.
All right, Senator Lilly, I believe everyone has the information now.
Mr. Chair, members, Senate File 2227 looks at the retirement ages of judges and strikes that retirement age. I serve on the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, and at that council we became aware that there was a potential violation of age discrimination laws that may be litigated, and this legislation will change those laws or change that law so that we don't have that potential violation. And I'm joined by Chief Judge Raymond Krause, who would like to address the bill.
Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Raymond Krause. I am the Chief Administrative Law Judge for the state of Minnesota. And as Senator Lilly mentioned, the bill does nothing more than remove the mandatory retirement age of age 70 from the statutes. That statute was determined by the Federal Equal Employment Opportunities Commission to be in violation of the age discrimination statutes at the federal level, and to avoid any litigation over that, the really only option we have is to remove that from the statute.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Chair, sir, the rest of our judges, district court and others, I believe, do have that 70-year and see Supreme Court justice. How is that different from these? Is this a different category that would put it out of compliance, or are we out of compliance with all of them?
Chairman, Judge
Senator Olson, the Office of Administrative Hearings, like the Tax Court and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, is an executive branch court. As such, our judges are members of the civil service and therefore covered by the federal age discrimination laws, whereas the judicial branch judges are elected and not covered by that, by case law. So that's the difference.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Lilly?
I'd like to move that Senate File 2227 be passed to the...
Recommended to pass.
Recommended to pass. And
sent to the floor.
Recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
All right, on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Judge. I know everybody wants to take a breath because we are moving quite rapidly, right?
Okay. Keep going.
I believe we have the ninth item on the agenda coming. Is that correct? Oh, and besides that, I wanted to make sure everybody had a fiscal note in front of them, and that's on its way from duplicating here for Senate File. Yeah, we just have the one there. So.
Mr. Chairman, are you going to present your bill since you're here?
You can present. Okay, do I have it? Well, actually, I would, but I think it's all still up in my office. I didn't realize we were going to go this rapidly, and I had planned it for tonight. But.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Chair.
I'm sure
That's
you can
no
do
excuse.
It from memory.
So. I'm sure I could. I don't know if Tom Barrett's here.
Mr. Chair, you put me under the spot.
Yeah, I know I did.
It's about square play.
That's right. Well, and the one testifier I have isn't going to be here until tonight, so Mr. Barrett wanted to be here, so.
Which
one?
1754.
He's got
2314
then.
Well, I don't think
he'll do his.
Okay. Senator Daley, we'll bring him up to do Senate File 2354. Disabled Veteran State Government Non-Competitive Appointment Authorization. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, as we've discussed in this committee before, there is a high unemployment rate among our veterans. And this is an agency bill brought to me by Mr. McKelleny and MDVA, and it's a measure that can, again, not all in one fell swoop, not a silver bullet, but it's another tool in the toolbox to help address that high unemployment rate among our veterans. And with that, I'll just let Mr. McKelleny talk about some of the ideas and rationale, a little bit about the bill, whatever other background he wants to share with the committee.
I'm just a little concerned. Was the bill in anybody's packet?
No.
No, we're waiting for it. So
we don't have any of the bills that are
not anymore. We're losing them all up.
Do you have a copy of the bill?
I do. I just went down to get it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thinking that we might have some extra time, and here, lo and behold, here we do. I could read it for members. I'll go slow.
I think we've got somebody that can run and get a copy quick here. I'm sorry, I apologize. I thought the bill was in the packets.
Mr. Chairman, would it be okay if Mr. McKelleny described the bill?
Why don't we do that?
While we're waiting.
Yep. State your name, please, and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike McKelleny from Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And the reason we put this bill forward, we've asked Senator Daley to carry it. This, as he stated already, is just one more avenue that we think we can help control or reduce the veterans unemployment rate in the state of Minnesota. What this bill will do when it's before you, you'll see that we're asking that veterans that have a 30% service-connected disability would receive a direct appointment through a hiring authority in state government. The federal government does this. Other states do this. As a matter of fact, in Minnesota, currently they're starting to implement this at the managerial plan, managerial levels. And so what this bill would do, we believe, is reduce or help reduce veterans' unemployment rates, but also get veterans in the door, even the playing field. I know Senator Daley has put forward a wonderful bill in the private sector, and this is something that we think we can do as a state agency to help reduce, again, veterans' unemployment rate in the government sector. This is a bill that would address or give authority, again, to hiring authorities within state government to entry-level and non-competitive positions. Beyond that, Mr. Chair, if there's any questions you may have after you read the bill.
Members, I'd just like to emphasize that
Senator Daley,
the applicant, this 30% disabled veteran, must meet the qualification standards. So they have to be qualified just at the same level as anyone else. Meet the requirements for that position. So we're not looking to circumvent the standards. They have to meet all the standards. And once they do, then this is a measure that will help them get in.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that issue, Senator, there is really not a specific language in here that articulates what you just said. So could you point to another part of the statute where that is defined? Because in the language that you have, it doesn't say that they have to meet the qualifications required by the job that the veteran is applying for.
Members, if I
could. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could point you to lines 1.20 and 1.21, it does say that the appointing authority determines that the disabled veteran meets the minimum qualifications for the vacant position.
Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. Chairman, but that's quite different. The appointing authority determines doesn't mean that I have to read this carefully. So in the opinion of the testifier, does this language actually means that the veteran, the disabled veteran, meets the minimum qualifications?
Mr. Chair.
Is enough?
Mr. McElder.
Senator, yes, as we developed this bill, we talked with other agencies, we talked with MMB, we talked with HR, and I think they captured the intent pretty good in that we're not asking for anything different in any of the hiring procedures other than to essentially create a new avenue to hire veterans. All the qualifications will still need to be met. You have to meet the minimum qualifications, and it's our intent to ensure that hiring authorities, in fact, continue to meet those criteria.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wager.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, excuse me. Senator Daley.
I'd just like to interject, and it's not all veterans in this case. It's actually just those that are disabled, and the definition here in this case is a 30% disability. So it's a fairly small group, and I if you're going to ask me what is that exact number, I don't know the exact number of veterans that would qualify under this criteria exactly, but we can certainly do the research and get that number to you.
Senator Wager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Daley, would it be your intent that this also apply to honorably discharged vets, or is that implied, or do you want that broad?
Senator, or Mr.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wager, yeah, it's implied that that would be for honorably discharged veterans that are 30% disabled.
Mr. Chair, would
Senator Wager
make it clear if we put in the phrase honorably discharged?
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wicker, I'm certainly open to that. I think it meets the intent of the agency and all of us.
Staff here, maybe you can help Senator Wicker, because I know he would like to do an oral amendment. Where would that be best placed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wicker and members, the definition of veterans that appears elsewhere in the statute that applies throughout includes that honorably discharged qualification.
It's 197 something.
Yeah, I know I have it here somewhere. So I don't believe it's necessary here.
So Mr. Chair, that's fine.
Senator Wager, you're okay with that? Okay. Further discussion? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure that I'm thinking about working with you, Senator Lilly, to perhaps look into adding some language to these bills that really put a that help us get a report on the progress that we make with these bills that you have introduced. Because I am not hesitant to support this because I think we need to do it. I think part of the issue is how do we know that we will make a difference? So I would like to see later on the administration perhaps providing some kind of a report, even if it is a brief report that tells us that we're moving in the direction that you want to take this and that we are making progress. So I wanted to leave that as a comment and see if we could work together on
Mr. Chairman,
excuse me. Are you thinking like, we've talked about sunsetting some of these in so many years so that they have to come back and at that time they would have to provide a report rather than to – is that where you're going, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, probably, yeah, something like that. And again, not because this might not be necessary, but because periodically I think we need to review.
Right.
You know, we're saying we're going to create jobs, we're going to do this, we're going to – these languages intending to do this – My question always is, aren't we doing this, and why aren't we doing this? I'm just very puzzled with that. Why is that we haven't been, you know, doing this in the first place? So now I want to know in a year from now if we actually made a difference by incorporating this new language into the statutes.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres Ray, I completely agree with your sentiments about how are we doing. What is the data showing us? And part of the challenge that I've encountered in the year that I've been working on these things is it's really, really hard to get that data, and it's primarily because of privacy issues. It's not collected in one central repository. It's not easy to get, and it's really challenging because of the privacy issues. If we could figure out a way, and I've worked to try to figure this out, and I would be more than happy to work with you to try to figure out a way that we can do it so where we can collect this data and respect the privacy issues at the same time to figure out how we are doing, because it is a great challenge we're facing.
Any further discussion? Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to move Senate File 2354 and have it be referred, I believe, to the next stop along the way is the Senate floor.
That is correct. Senator Daley recommends that Senate File 2354 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. All right, members, before we move to this one, we're going to just announce that Senate File 575, Senator Newman's bill, will be heard tonight, and I believe that start time is going to be 6 p.m. All right. Now we're going to move to the 15th item on the agenda. That is Senate File 1754, Senator Perry's lawful gambling per diem reimbursement modification for military marching, color guard, or honor guard units. Senator Perry, I believe you have an author's amendment.
I do, Senator Daley. I believe it's the A1 author's amendment.
All right. If you could explain what the amendment is, and if you want to have some assistance to do that, that would be great.
Sure. What it really does right now, and I have Mr. Barrett here because he can really explain it well, but I can tell you what it does is it takes lottery proceeds from what they have been getting, $35 up to $50. I believe that's how we do it. And I don't know if Mr. Lundeen would like to explain that part or if Mr. Barrett would like to. Maybe we could have Mr. Lundeen just give us insight on his side while Mr. Barrett's getting ready here.
I'm ready.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Just one moment. Senator Torres-Ray.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have the bill. And if we're going to go through these bills, I think it would be good to have the staff just go get it. Go get the bills, because we have about 15 minutes probably that you're going to go into.
I thought it was in my – excuse me, Mr. Chair, but I thought
Senator
it was.
Perry.
It was in my packet, but evidently through the correlating it didn't.
Members, if we just not head nod, can you indicate if you have this in your packet or not?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, members do not have it. Let's take a little bit of a pause. Perhaps.
Maybe what we can do, Mr. Chair, if we will, Mr. Bear can explain it while we find where the bill disappeared to, and then you'll have some knowledge with testimony.
That sounds good. Mr. Barrett, please proceed. Say your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tom Barrett. I'm the director of the Gambling Control Board. And the bill being offered by Senator Perry once it gets here is a very minor change, but it involves modification of the lawful purpose description categories. Primarily, this is affecting the veterans' posts out in Minnesota. Currently, they're allowed to spend up to $35 per day per person that to members of the post that serve in the honor guard. The original change simply raises that per diem from $35 to $50.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Barrett. Mr. Lundeen, do you have anything to add to that?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perry.
Thank you. Now I know why, because we had, I'm sorry to the committee, we had not expected bills to move this rapidly. We have two packets. We have the afternoon packet and a night packet. And so the night packet isn't here yet. It was to be ready by 6, and that's why you don't have it. They're printing this right now. As we speak, and it should be here momentarily.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Well, I'll just ask a question while we're kind of waiting for the bill to come. Mr. Barrett, under that language, it would just be an option for the local. They if they wanted to do 25 and everybody's okay with that, they could do that. But this would just allow anywhere from 0 to 50 at their discretion?
Mr. Barrett.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, correct. The bill simply puts a maximum amount, and a lot of veterans' posts pay less than the max, but this does give them an option.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
You know, it might be worthwhile mentioning, too, that so that some might not think that they're required to go to $50 in their stipends. I think we talked about that, because some don't. So this just allows those to have that opportunity.
Senator Perry, it talks here in the notes about a fiscal note. Is that something you're prepared to just share a little bit of background information with us without – we don't have the fiscal note in front of us, but maybe it's helpful to provide some background information on that. Mr. Barrett.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a great opportunity to clarify. When we approached for the fiscal note, I think the original thought was this was an expense coming out of the Gambling Control Board, and it is not. This is an expense classification pertaining to the use of proceeds from gambling specifically for the Veterans Post. It has no fiscal impact on the Gambling Control Board, and therefore the fiscal note we responded to showed a zero impact.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett.
Did we get the bill handed to everyone?
It's coming.
Here it comes. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Maybe this would be a time to say, wouldn't it be nice if we had OET up and running and we had laptops with screens so that we could save the trees and be able to instantaneously see the
Certainly agree with that. Footage. Absolutely. Senator Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Perry, I guess, up in my part of Minnesota, we thrive on this industry of printing a lot of paper, so I might be a little bit at odds with that point.
Senator Perry, we do have the original bill as introduced in front of us. We do not have the amendment yet. It is on its way, I'm told. Senator Perry?
Yes.
You have any good jokes to tell us?
I don't. Well, I thought I was making one on the trees, but that didn't go over. Not unless Mr. Barrett has.
I won't go there.
Any lottery jokes?
It's too bad Senator Cohen's not here. He can fill the time for us.
Here comes the amendment, I believe. No. Mr. Chair, Mr.
Senator
Barrett
Perry
found exactly what the amendment will address if you'll allow him to testify to that.
Looks like they are handing out the amendment right now as we speak.
He can point out the line that they can look at right away.
Okay. Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your consideration. I direct your attention to the original bill to line 4.19. And this particular, I hope that's what the amendment says, but this particular change is minor. And after the word service groups, the word or
Thank you.
Should be struck and the word and inserted. This is one of those things, and I can explain the background.
Just one moment, Mr. Barrett. I believe all the members now have a copy of the original bill and the amendment. I'm looking at page 4. And I'm looking at line 19. Strike the second or. So we're talking about other. Senator Goodwin.
Sorry, I don't see.
see a bill here. What number is it again?
1754.
Oh. No, I don't have a copy of the bill yet.
All right, here we go. We could turn to page 4, line 19. Just going up a little bit before that to other nonprofit organizations, community groups or service groups or. So that second or, and insert and. So, Mr. Barrett, if you could run us through that from your view one more time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, apologize. The significance of this or to and hit home. Right now, veterans groups are allowed to use gambling proceeds to improve their building, make repairs, if they make those posts open to other nonprofit organizations at no cost. Now, our assumption always was that that would also be their primary headquarters. But we had a recent case involving an organization that read the law and says, well, we don't need to open it up at no cost to other charities because it says or. You either open it up or it's your organization's headquarters, which they're right, but that wasn't the intent back when we modified it. So it's one small case, but it's an important one nonetheless, and the organization and that we're dealing with is certainly willing to abide by it, but we thought this would be an opportunity to clarify that. So what the intent of the amendment, simple amendment, would be is the Veterans Post, acting as its headquarters, must also make their post available at no cost to other nonprofits in the area and therefore use proceeds for repairs.
Members, any questions about that particular amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I see that King Wilson's here from Allied, and may I assume there's support from various stakeholders on this?
Please say your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, King Wilson, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. Senator Wieger, good amendment, good bill.
Boy, I like that. That's great. Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Testimony.
Fantastic.
Succinct.
Members.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
I would move Senate File 1754 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Members.
As amended.
Senator Perry, from a Mason's rule or Robert's rules of order, we got to go back. We got to adopt that amendment first. And so to the A1 amendment, members, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the A1 amendment does pass. Now, Senator Perry.
I would move Senate File 1754 as amended be recommended to pass and send to the floor.
Members, all those in favor of doing just that, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Perry. Senator Perry.
I think, committee, if we could, we have one more, and they have been waiting patiently here. It's a resolution, and I would hope that our...
Let's proceed, yes.
As soon as I get a copy here, we'll proceed with Senate File 2314, which is a resolution, members, memorializing the President and Congress to formally recognize the Khmer Freedom Fighters. And I know we have Mr. Walker here and Mr. Kwong here, and we're going to try to move this as time is getting short. But I think what I would like to do, I've read through this. I've talked with Commissioner Shelato about it.
Just one moment. For members, just so that you know, this Senate File 2314 is a resolution memorializing the President and the Congress to formally recognize the Khmer Freedom Fighters. So it's a resolution.
Right.
Senator Correct. Perry.
And maybe I could have... you should have a copy of the Senate resolution in front of you, and maybe I could just turn things over so Mr. Walker, who has been working with me on this, could say a few words and then our other testifier.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Mr. Walker, please state your name for the record and please proceed.
My name is Scott Walker. I'm the executive
director of the International Khmer Assembly, headquartered here in St. Paul, Minnesota. One of our missions with the assembly here is to record oral history of the Khmer experiences in before, during, and after the exodus from the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. During the course of that oral history, we were doing a number of veterans, and the subject of their participation in American society and in the communities came up. And to my amazement, they were not participating in Memorial Day services and many of our veteran activities here in Minnesota and internationally. And, of course, I asked the question, well, why is that? And what came back to me was quite astonishing, that no legislative body or government agency has ever recognized the Khmer veteran for their service in supporting U.S. troops and defending democracy and freedom in Southeast Asia. And so this resolution remedies that. They feel as if that they've never been recognized, so therefore, in many ways, they still feel as if they were refugees and not really full American citizens. And so this resolution attempts, anyway, to remedy that, and hopefully gives them permission to participate in many of the holidays and the different functions that we Americans hold dear. I'm here with 33 Khmer veterans and sons and daughters of those Khmer veterans here in the room, and I'm also here with Colonel Edward Kong, who is the brigade commander of the Minnesota Khmer veterans. So with that, maybe we could introduce Colonel Kong.
Yeah, Mr. Walker, thank you very much, and to all the Khmer veterans, thank you. Mr. Kong.
Yeah, my name is Edward Kong, and I was a former veteran during the conflict in Southeast Asia. From my involvement that I speak today was related to from 1970 to 1975, that through my experience that I fought side by side with the United States Armed Force, and I had a chance to escape from the country from 1979 to the Thai refugee camp, and Ho Chan Chang to come to United in 1981. I myself involved a lot of things in in a community in U.S. In a military community, and also the Thai refugee came to this country from 1979 to present time. And right now I was in Thai, but I still. I met with Scott a while ago. I told him about what my experience there, and he tried to help me with, advocating to help all the Khmer veterans that I have known them for many years in Minnesota there and some other state as well. But today I speak through my experience only that I myself is a former veteran during the Vietnam War there, and I was wounded around 1973 at the battlefield that I fought along with the U.S. Force, again, the communists who, fought against us. That's what I can say. And besides that, I thank you for the Senate Committee and the chairman for recognizing us, because we live in a settle for many years. We never say anything. We just don't know what to ask for right now. So I would like to see if you can help in with that matter. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Kong.
Yeah.
Senator Perry. Okay. I thought I looked like you wanted to say something. I'm looking out in the audience, and I've met with many of you in Senator Perry's office. And at that time, privately, said thank you. I want to, on behalf of Senator Perry and all of us here, to publicly say thank you. Thank you for the tremendous sacrifice in all the years of not having that recognition, just on a human basis, personal basis. Our governments don't recognize certain things because it's just not one of those things. But just from a person-to-person basis, it's important that we say thank you.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 2314 be recommended to pass and send to the floor.
Members, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion does pass.
Thank you,
Senator Perry. You. We're going to recess, members, and see you back here at 6 p.m.
Thank you.
Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. Chairman, or maybe Senator Perry, so the intent for this evening, we're reconvening at
6 p.m.
6 p.m., and we're going to take, could you tell us what bills?
12, and just the remaining bills, seven bills remaining, didn't cover this
Mr.
afternoon.
Chair, we will start Senator out Perry. With Senate File 575. At 6 o'clock, and then we'll finish the other bills behind that that we didn't get
that
to
were on
today.
The agenda.
Yes.
Are there any new
there are no
items
new
to
bills,
be added to?
Okay. None
so whatever
added.
We did not cover this afternoon, starting with 575. Senator Torres Ray.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So only the bills that are in the agenda.
That's correct.
Which we did not cover up to this point this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Fair.
Okay, we are in recess. Thank you, members.
Juggle it.
Okay.
One thing, resolution.